Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, October 17, 2018. The UN World Food Programme suspends food delivery in parts of South Sudan.
If you look at the IPC classification, one of the key factors in that classification is an unrestricted access to relief to humanitarian support. So if that is not granted or not be able, we are not able to deliver on that, those people will get into a very serious situation.
And the wife of a detained South Sudanese politician has this message for President Salva Kiir.
I just tell him to release my husband. Now that they've signed peace and he has even ordered the release of prisoners, I don't see any reason why they are keeping my husband.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN World Food Programme has suspended the delivery of food aid to some parts of South Sudan due to insecurity. A WFP official in South Sudan says the decision will affect 60,000 needy families. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Simon Kamel Beck, the WFP Deputy Country Director in South Sudan, says the areas cut off in Kloto Lier, Dabloal and Mayendit, places that have been hardest hit by the nearly 5 years of fighting. In recent months, government and armed opposition forces have repeatedly clashed in Lier. Both sides deny responsibility for starting the clashes, according to local officials. In an exclusive interview with this program, Kamel Beck says it's nearly impossible for aid agencies to access the areas due to rampant insecurity.
When it's insecure, we can't send our people on the ground because we have to send our people to organize the food distribution. So if we can't send our people, and that's not only WFP, but that's UNICEF, NGOs, it's a whole range of humanitarian actors who first have to go to the ground, prepare, do the assessment, identify the people in need, and then the food will be delivered. So as long as those conditions are not in place, the food cannot be supplied.
Last year, government and aid agencies declared famine in Lier and Mayendit. A majority of the residents in these cut-off areas are internally displaced after they fled their villages to escape fighting between government and rebel forces and depend entirely on assistance from aid agencies to survive. In the absence of food aid, the IDPs often resort to eating wild animals and fruits. Kamel Beck says the situation places already vulnerable people into more trouble.
The moment the food distribution is delayed for a few months, then you can imagine how quickly the situation will deteriorate for them. If you look at the IPC classification, one of the key factors in that classification is an unrestricted access to relief to humanitarian support. So if that is not granted or not be able, we are not able to deliver on that, then very quickly those people will get into a very serious situation.
According to recently released food security reports by government and UN agencies, 6.1 million people across the country are food insecure, 47,000 of which were in catastrophic levels of food insecurity, and 1.7 million people were in emergency levels of food insecurity as a result of protracted conflict, disruption of livelihood, and poor economic conditions.
So it's erratic. And that makes it also so serious for those people because they don't really know when the next meal will come. So it's unfortunately that scenario still happens, but we really sincerely hope that the peace agreement will bring an end to that scenario.
Onyote Adigo, South Sudan's agriculture and food security minister, describes the reports of fighting in the food insecure areas as unfortunate. Adigo tells South Sudan in Focus that the government and opposition groups are trying to address the problem.
Recently, the two chief of defense forces from the IO and that of the government. They had a very cordial meeting in Khartoum where they promised to work together to identify problems. And also everybody should put in his mind that the infrastructure in South Sudan is very difficult. Communication is difficult when some of the opposites are not able to communicate with their soldiers in the field, that there is peace. Now, with the peace coming, I think there will be a joint team to go and disseminate peace either on the side of the government or the side of opposition so that people are able to work together.
Chapter 3 of the Revitalized Peace Agreement stipulates that during the pre-transitional period and throughout the transition, the parties shall create an enabling political, administrative, operational, and legal environment for the delivery of humanitarian assistance and protection. It also says the warring parties must secure access to civilian populations in need of emergency humanitarian assistance. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Since this program broke the story about riots at the National Security Headquarters in Juba, there is very little information on the fate of Carbino Wall, one of the prisoners who led the riot. Deng Michael is a friend of Carbino, who has been following the government reaction after Carbino spoke to VOA. Michael says the government has shut down all of Carbino's businesses, including the CAS security company, which employs thousands of South Sudanese.
The family of Carbino have not been able to see him, and everyone else is just wondering what happened. We don't know the whereabouts of Carbino, whether he's alive, whether he's okay. The government has not been able to give any statement.
There was a letter that I saw last week from the Bank of South Sudan ordering the Kenya Commercial Bank to shut down the accounts of Carbino or CAS security company. How credible is that information?
It is absolutely credible and it is true. It was not only Kenyan commercial bank. It was sent to all the commercial banks in South Sudan, directing them to close all the accounts that are related to Carbino World. It was followed by immediate closure of Carbino's main businesses, car security, restaurant, conference center, and any other business that was related to him. Thousands of employees who were working 20 with cars are not jobless. Personally, I believe they are just actually punishing the ordinary South Sudanese who are actually paying their bills and depending on the business.
How many people are employed in the CAS security firm?
All I know is that more than 2,000 families indirectly benefit from the company. In CAS specifically, there is about 1,500 based on my understanding from last year.
I remember when Carbino spoke with VOA, there was a statement that was allegedly from the National Security saying Carbino is a captain in the National Security and they were detaining him for administrative measures. And here you are telling me he is a businessman, an entrepreneur. Those two versions don't match up.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a few things that need to be made clear here. One important thing is that, yes, Carbino has a security background. And I think there was a reason why most of us were never involved in his background, because we have known him as a businessman for the last few years. Myself, we've been friends, and I've never seen him talking about anything to do with the security business or in any capacity serving in the security service. It is true that he was a member 8 years ago, and so if the government is detaining him as an officer, then it was something that was never made clear to anyone. Everyone else knows Carbino as a businessman.
Friends and close relatives who are now wondering where he is, I mean, have you made your feelings known to the authorities in Juba?
Since Sunday, no one has been able to communicate either to the family. To my understanding, the family have not been allowed to meet with Carbino and to see if he's okay. The only surprise that we got is the closure of all business immediately. This drastic development says that this case is being handled in a way that people are not interested in solution. They just want to destroy, you know, the little establishment that this guy has made for this country.
as a friend of Carbino, there is any message you want to pass out there to the South Sudanese people, what would that message be?
Carbino's case was a personal case, and we understood from the statement that the government issued on Sunday that he was detained on administrative issues. That's one. If that was the case, there is nothing that connects Carbino's business to his case, you know, that can lead to the closure of businesses immediately. Because you are not punishing Carbino, you are punishing the people who are working, the people who are paying their bills in this economic crisis.
That's Deng Michael, a friend of Carbino Wall, who is detained by South Sudan's National Security. Deng was speaking with me from Nairobi earlier today. Still on issues of political prisoners, the wife of Agri Idri, who is also believed to be behind bars in South Sudan, says President Salva Kiir should release her husband. Aya Warile says there is peace in the country and that President Salva Kiir should honor his pledge to release all political prisoners. She says her family is devastated by the prolonged detention of her husband.
I've never heard from him since he left the house on 24th of January last year, 2017. I've not heard from him, and I've not heard about him. Just rumors or information on social media.
What are the people that he was with, like the SPLM leadership, the SPLM IO leadership, what are they telling you? What are they doing, actually?
I can't tell. People talk to me on individual basis, but officially, nobody has said anything to us as family.
And have you gone to Juba? Have you ever engaged the government of South Sudan to find out where your husband is?
I haven't gone to Juba since his disappearance. And my reason is, even if I'm to go, I'm not sure if I can access the president.
What about the South Sudanese embassy in Nairobi? Have you spoken to the ambassador? Have you made your voice known to them that this is not normal for someone to just disappear and people don't know where he is?
I've not talked to the embassy. Some people advise me to go there, but I'm not sure of what information I'll really get from them. So I didn't go there.
Could you tell us how you have been feeling all this time?
Anybody who has a family will understand what we have gone through. In these 21 months, members of this family have reacted to this situation differently. Some have gone into depression, getting treatment and going back again. So it hasn't been easy for us. We don't even feel secured because we even don't know what else the same people are thinking or are planning to do. So we are a kind of insecure.
If you're given access to President Kiir, what would you tell him?
I'd just tell him to release my husband. Now that they've signed peace and he has even ordered the release of prisoners, I don't see any reason why they are keeping my husband.
I once asked Minister of Information about the disappearance of your husband and another activist called Samuel Dong, and he said the government is not responsible for people who have rebelled. Here is a situation the government is denying that they don't have any connection to what happened to your husband.
But they've been seen there. We've seen it all over the media. My husband and his colleague, Samuel Dong, were spotted in Juba. So there's no way somebody will tell me that they are not there. Even if they are not responsible, then they should tell us who is responsible for that. He is our president. He is the president of South Sudan. He can't tell. They can't tell us that they are not responsible. These guys are in Juba and we demand their release.
This is a very difficult situation that you are in, and I would not like to ask you a lot of questions, but what are some elders from South Sudan? You know, your husband was a banker, he was well known there. What are some of the elders in South Sudan doing to really find out where he is?
I know of our community in Nairobi. We tried to ask through members of our community officially, but nothing nothing came out. That was the first or the second week after his disappearance. Since then, I'm not sure if anybody is doing anything, unless I'm not informed.
That's Aya Warile, wife of Agri Idri, SPLM's IO member, who has been abducted in Nairobi last year by people believed to be acting on orders from the South Sudan security operatives. She was speaking to me from Nairobi earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, refugees in Uganda say they need food. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you?
So the most embarrassing thing I've ever experienced in my life was at the time when I experienced my first menstruation period. It was really embarrassing, especially because it happened at school and in class and, you know, being in a mixed school again. So it was really embarrassing.
The most embarrassing thing that has ever happened to me was when my mom shouted at me in front of my crush.
The most embarrassing thing that happened to me is when I was with my friends. It was back in 2012. My girlfriend, she got annoyed with me and she slapped me in public. So that was so embarrassing to me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. As the world commemorates World Food Day this week, some South Sudanese refugees in Uganda's Adjumani district say nearly 2 years after they fled the conflict in their country, they are still struggling to find enough food, even with food ratio coming from the UN World Food Programme. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from Adjumani in northern Uganda.
World Food Day was launched in October 1945 to tackle global hunger. Each year, people around the world pledge their commitment to end hunger. But South Sudanese refugee Andoa Florence, a single mother of six children at Uganda's Agodzo camp, says her family, just like many others at the camp, go hungry because the food they receive is often depleted within days.
We are collecting firewood from our area there, Agodzo. We are transporting to town. We use our heat to transporting it here. If you buy, you sell it, you're going to buy this one, maize and other things for survival. This is how we are surviving.
The WFP gives the refugees small quantities of cereals, beans, cooking oil, and some salt. Kurtu Martin, a community leader in Agodzo, says often families are forced to share, in certain cases for several months, the little food they receive, with dependents still trying to get enrolled in the camp.
The common problem really we are facing every day and every day about the food lock is some cases of people whose names are missing, and you see they return food. Actually, at the end of the day, you may find a lot of quarrels.
Florence agrees. She says there have been cases of women abandoning their husbands and children for other men who have better resources.
Most of the, you know, women who cannot endure the stress, they will get married or they will leave family. That one, it will bring family neglect in our society.
Many refugees argue they could supplement their food rations or vary their diets by producing their own food, but say the plots of land they have are too small. Martin says this means the refugees cannot farm the land for fear their crops will be destroyed.
Our area is, there's a lot of stones, let me say mountains. We do quarry, then and you just cut firewood. But firewood is also restricted, and then the quarry is also restricted.
The UN Food Agency admits its South Sudan operation faces challenges. Robert Decker is head of WFP's crisis response.
In the coming months, there will be also some pipeline breaks, so we're still hoping for new contributions, so we can quickly purchase some of the foodstuffs that we distribute. Our total needs for the next 6 months is about 132 million, of which we have a shortfall of 68. So we need 68 to complete the gap.
This year's World Food Day celebration is being held under the theme "A Zero Hunger World by 2030 is Possible." For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Adzumani.
Still on the matters of World Food Day, more than 821 million people are chronically undernourished, and conflict, weather, and declining economy is to blame for that. As UN works to end hunger as part of its 2030 agenda, it also says people around the world must take action to eliminate hunger. Ayen Dengbio reports from Washington.
This year's World Food Day theme is "Our Actions Are Our Future." But that future looks grim, as world hunger is once again on the rise. As the world sees an increase in world hunger, UN agencies say it's not too late to reverse course.
We are not on track to reach SDG 2, so World Food Day really happened at a critical juncture. And the theme of this year's event is "Our Actions Are Our Future. A Zero Hunger World by 2030 is Possible." Now it's time to act and to shape our future.
Ambassador Inga Rhonda King, president of the UN Economic and Social Council, also warns of the catastrophic consequences of inaction.
The global food production is already large enough to ensure that no person goes hungry. We need to act in a way that is smarter and more sustainable.
Climate change, conflict, and weakening economies around the world contribute to difficulties in ending world hunger by 2030. King says individuals could help stop man-made issues like conflict or pollution, which contributes to climate change. Pierre Thiam, a Senegalese chef, author, and activist, explains how individuals can do just that with the help of a single grain called fonio, a gluten-free West African grain that has been cultivated for centuries and is packed with vitamins and essential amino acids.
We are partnering with NGOs, and we are also partnering with investors in Africa, in West Africa, to build the first fonio mill that's like a world-class mill that will process fonio in volumes and in quality. So the quality is very important, because the fonio that's produced right now in that's distributed in the regions is not processed in a way that's completely clean, so you always have some sand in it.
Thiam says the grain is also drought resistant and helps to fight desertification by keeping carbon dioxide inside the soil. He says once he builds the mill, they will be able to produce clean fonio that is distributable and accessible across the globe, including the United States. Ayen Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
Traders in Jonglei state capital Bor are urging authorities in this Jonglei and Fangak states to protect traders traveling on the River Nile between the two states. A Jonglei state official says armed men attacked and looted 7 million South Sudanese pounds from a group of traders delivering food to Fangak. Deng Guy Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Jonglei State Trade Commission official Mabiu Rukwal says the traders were attacked on October 13th around the area of Chambe on the Nile.
A motorboat which was coming from Fangak State to Bor was hijacked along the way. The traders' money was looted. About 7 million pounds was looted. This money belonged to 5 traders.
Kwal is calling on Fangak and Jonglei state officials to protect traders along the Nile River so they can supply food commodities to the local communities in both areas.
This one is a big loss to the traders, and it can bring down their businesses. The work of the traders is to deliver food items nearer to the people so that they can buy. If they get money, they come back in order to take more goods. Now the traders are sick because of this loss.
Munir Farha says he lost more than 300,000 Sudanese pounds to the pirates who attacked them on the Nile. Speaking in Arabic, Farha describes what happened.
The gunmen attacked us when we were coming on the boat after we left Chambe port about an hour. These criminals were hiding in the grass and they came after us and started shooting at us. We ran into the grass along the Nile.
Thomas Gatkoth, the Pangag state coordinator in Bor, condemns the incident.
This situation, this road belongs to the Nainol government. We report to the Nainol government to take action for this case. Land there is a river Nile, like border of Uganda and Kenya, or Tanzania, or Nigeria, it belongs to the Nainol government. I suggested there is a government if you try the level base. See the company the boat is going to from Bor up to Tayar.
Gatkoth says the Nile River remains the easiest means of transport for traders and humanitarian organizations to deliver goods and assistance to communities in Pangak and other estates in the greater Upper Nile region. And he worries that more attacks on traders using the river could worsen the economic and humanitarian situations of communities in remote areas. Atong Kwol, the Jonglei State Information Minister, who also condemns the attack, says state officials quickly reacted by sending a police force to the area.
The report came to the state police, where they sent some policemen to go and hunt the criminals. So 3 million was recovered. But all the same, the criminals managed to escape. And in the process, one person was injured.
Minister Atong advises traders not to carry large sums of money, but rather deposit it in the banks. But the traders say there are no banks in the remote areas. In June this year, two people were killed when unidentified gunmen attacked a fleet of 10 small boats hired by the World Food Program to transport food from Bor to Pangak State. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
That report by Dengai Deng in Bor brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday, when I'll leave you with the song Farida by Matelo featuring Wako.
Malbita ferida, la mana waga ficherima, bolisi ki fetishwana. Minja malbita ferida, la mana waga ficherima, bolisi ki fetishwana. Min halawa bita ferida, la mana irteki buhatia, ala deja asaluana. Min halawa bita ferida, la mana irteki buhatia, ala deja asaluana. Maleshi ya Yesu Masia, maleshi ya Rabbi Yeshua. Maleshi ya Yesu Masia, maleshi ya Rabbi Yesu. Wawerini ashanja malde kuliom gizidu.
That's our... We have been listening to Matelo and Wako with the song Farida. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Yomkin makifaya shan.
ta ferida. Jamal bitenu jumu gamara pisama.